essentially the primary quantities of interest and where they come from, you know, what sort of model or inferential procedure, if indeed any formal model or inferential procedure has been used to produce these forecasts, is largely irrelevant. Forecasts or predictions are assessed essentially only in terms of how well they do in predicting or being calibrated with future realised values. There is, of course, nothing that stops us also pulling into play some sort of assessment based on future realised counts alongside our own methodology, but and especially if there's any doubt about the suitability of the model class. But certainly the whole tenor of our approach is to determine the suitability of the model class to the data at hand and then produce the optimal estimate of the forecast distribution from that point. Well, the model class that we're looking at will be familiar to certain people, very familiar to certain people in this audience, and perhaps not to everyone, however, the so-called integer value autoregressive class, whereby our count data is the sum of several unobserved components, each of which is defined, all of which are defined on the non-negative integer space. And if we look at this sort of quantity here, it's the sum of xt minus k independent Bernoulli random variables, each of which has a success probability alpha k. So this binomial thinning operator here takes the number of counts in time period t minus k and preserves a certain number of them into the next time period, at which point they'll be thinned again by alpha k minus 1 and so on. So what happens is that, you know, the events or offspring of events in one time period are propagated through future time periods, with this binomial thinning placing some sort of restriction on that propagation. So we're looking at a branching process of a sort with immigration where the epsilons are the new immigrants at any time period. When p equals 1, we have a q, i.e. when we have one binomial thinning operation there. So we have a number of survivors from the previous period plus a number of new arrivals, or we have a number of births plus the number of non-deaths. So we're looking at a very broad class. And in the paper, we give many references to across many different disciplines in which these models are used. Okay, so this epsilon, this arrivals process, is defined as the distribution for epsilon is defined as an infinite sequence of probabilities on the non-negative integers. So parametric maximum likelihood, of course, comes along and places a parametric structure on those probabilities, like, for example, assuming that they're Poisson. Non-parametric maximum likelihood, and of course that parametric assumption for the epsilons is then reflected in the maximum likelihood estimator of the forecast probabilities, which are always my Fs. Non-parametric maximum likelihood estimation imposes no structure on the arrivals probabilities, the Gs, other than, of course, assuming or imposing the normal restrictions associated with probabilities. And that means that we produce what we refer to as a non-parametric maximum likelihood estimator of the forecast distribution. I mean, you could refer to it as a semi-parametric estimator if you want, because we are retaining the parametric structure of the binomial thinning component. Obviously, the parametric maximum likelihood estimator is optimal only under the correct distributional assumption. The whole gist of the paper, of course, is to show that the non-parametric maximum likelihood estimator is optimal under any distributional assumption for epsilon. And to demonstrate that optimality, we need to do two things. We need to show that the non-parametric estimator of the model parameters, so the thinning parameters, and the arrivals probability, that estimator is optimal, and we need to show that the map that takes us from the parameter space into the forecast space is smooth enough for that optimality to be transferred. And of course, the problem with doing that, what makes it a complex and challenging problem, is that the space of the arrivals probabilities and the forecast probabilities are infinite in dimension. And I'll come back to that. Just looking at implementation of the estimator itself, and I'll just focus on the first order model for a moment, that's actually very straightforward. I mean, we can define the likelihood function in a very straightforward manner, conditional on a starting value. The arrivals probabilities enter the likelihood function via these products here. We're just mixing the conditional binomials over the arrivals probabilities, and that happens because of the convolution structure of the model. So when we see five counts, it could be because we have four survivors and one new arrival, or three survivors and two new arrivals, and so on and so forth. So that's very straightforward to specify and to estimate, subject to the standard restrictions on these, the positivity and summation restrictions on the probabilities there. So it's a split-second job to actually get the estimators out. Formally, we're maximising an empirical likelihood function, so we only ever estimate non-zero arrival probabilities that are compatible with the observed data. And that means we only ever have estimate a finite number of these G hats in practice. But of course, asymptotically, where the as T gets larger, so where the asymptotics are going to be operating, the dimension of that estimator increases and is ultimately infinite in dimension. And the asymptotic theory, the optimality proofs, need to accommodate that fact. Well, luckily for us, as well as Brendan, who's been working on these models for many years, so have some Dutch guys, and they have proven for this particular model the asymptotic normality and the asymptotic efficiency of that estimator in an appropriate sense for an infinite dimensional estimator, and hence proven that the estimator of the model parameters is optimal in that sense. Our focus is on the forecasting, so our focus is on this map and showing that that map is such that we can transfer that asymptotic normality and efficiency onto the estimated forecast distribution. And in one line, that essentially involves showing that the map is differentiable in a particular way and that the derivative is a bounded linear operator that satisfies a particular order condition. And that is essentially the theoretical component of the paper. Once we've shown the linearity of the derivative operation, then we can basically pull in a version of the delta rule to get us the asymptotic normality and efficiency of the forecast, the estimated forecast distribution. So we have this asymptotic optimality of the estimator, of the forecast distribution. Importantly, we also look at its performance in finite samples, because we know that non-parametric methods are, you know, can collapse a little bit in small samples, and we find that it does perform very well for large enough samples, and in particular in comparison with misspecified parametric alternatives, and particularly in the tail. So it does well at estimating the probability of those rare high counts. So that's important. So in addition to having this estimator that has nice properties, both asymptotic and finite sample, of course, in an empirical setting, we need to pull in some measure of sampling variability. And what we want to do is measure sampling variation in a way that reflects the fact that we're estimating a distribution. So we want that summation restriction to be respected. And we do not quite bootstrapping. We did do bootstrapping, but we're now doing a variation on bootstrapping for particular reasons, because it was easier to prove that it was a valid method than proving the bootstrapping was valid. So we're using a subsampling method, but at the end of the day, it's the same sort of idea. We take draws from an approximation to the sampling distribution of the estimator, and we ensure that the summation restriction is satisfied by the draws. Once we have the draws, we map the draws into a scalar metric that measures the difference between the drawn estimators at each point in the support of the forecast distribution and the actual empirical estimated forecast distribution. We do that so that we can rank that scalar metric and then produce a ranking of the estimated distributions, forecast distributions. And so we can then peel off an estimated forecast distribution at, say, the 95th percentile and say, well, you know, and we can say this because we have consistency of the method, that, you know, the probability of us seeing as extreme an estimated forecast distribution as this guy is only 5%, or less than 5%. So I'll finish off by just demonstrating what these things look like when we throw them at some data, and this is the iceberg data that we're going to look at, and it's iceberg ask orders on the German telecom stock, which I had to negotiate with the German Stock Exchange for about 6 months to have use of the data, even though someone else had constructed it for me. But anyway, we got there. So we're looking at the number of icebergs after every 10-minute period. Okay, so the number of icebergs that are still left in the order book after every 10-minute period. So obviously, by construction, the number that we see is a sum of the number that are still there from the previous period, i.e. haven't been executed, plus the number of new iceberg orders placed in the order book over that 10-minute period. So the NR1 model, that sort of queuing model, is exactly the right model for this data. And I'm using a sample just for this illustration of size of 500 to do the prediction one day ahead, because I need a large enough sample to make sure that the non-parametric estimator works well, but I don't want too large a sample, because too large a sample, my sampling distribution of my estimators will be very concentrated and I won't sort of get much interesting action to show you. And I'm going to plot the single empirical estimate of forecast distribution, just one step ahead. And I'm going to look at five extreme distributions in the sampling distribution of the estimator. And so the one at the 95th percentile and a couple on either side. Yeah. And that's really just so we can look at what sampling variability looks like in this sort of context. You know, what do extreme estimates look like when we're estimating a distribution? And so we get some sort of sense of how different our probabilistic forecasts could be in repeated sampling. So that's the estimate of the forecast distribution, the empirical estimate, and I've just focused on the probability of there being at least one iceberg order in the order book over that 10-minute period. So it's very high. So therefore, you could say there's a high probability of there being some sort of hidden liquidity in that order book at that over that short period of time. Now looking at the five red distributions, some of which are fairly superimposed one on the other, you can see that what happens is that at the extreme end, probability mass is shifted to the zero event, and so we have a lower probability associated with there being some hidden liquidity, even though that probability is still quite large. And the point being that sampling variability in this sort of setup does shift probability mass across the support. And in fact, in quite small samples, you can get quite a different looking distribution for your extreme distribution, and they indeed can look quite different one from the other, in small samples in particular. And that's enough.